one, and his name is Jerome McCarthy. I suppose there's a couple of the titles that he has. He's a priest, an ex-priest, a doctorate. He's a man of many fields. But I think one of the things that I admire the most is that he was very active in the El Salvador, underground railroad of supporting that during the conflict there. He's also fought for peace in Northern Ireland, and he continues to do that. And he stood up, one of the things he did was he left the church, the Catholic Church. He didn't leave the priesthood, but he stood up to certain elements that he thought was correct. And if that meant to be leave or be banished, that didn't stop him at all. He's a fighter for peace and society. And in his poetry, he's trying to develop it in his poetry as well. I didn't ask him to come and do poems of that. He's going to be doing poems, I think, a little bit of nature as well. So, but I'm very proud that he's come, and I thank him very much. And so I'll give the mic to Jerome McCarthy.
Well, thanks for that generous introduction. If I'm going to stutter, I'm not going to read very well. I picked a few poems that I thought were appropriate for the theme, some of them maybe loosely. The first one is called Gaia. I don't think I need tell anybody here who Gaia is in the context of wildlife rescue. They fall to the ground, and in falling feed the avid organisms of the soil, who in turn feed who needs be fed, and so the eternal falling, feeding, falling, repeats. They say God feeds the sparrow, who in falling feeds the worm, who in turn feeds another sparrow, who perhaps is eaten by an eagle, which only vultures feed upon. So it seems God feeds the sparrow with worms and feeds the worm with dead sparrows to ensure the eternal repeat, repeats. The leaves that descend and fall feeds the microbes of the soil, enriching it with nutrients to feed the flowers that grow below, exuding perfume for our pleasure, a treasure for birds and bees, who by attraction pollinate, help the flowers make love, make babies, babies born of love. They in turn flourish to perish, floreat ut pereat, the Latin poet said, and in perishing feed the eternal repeat, to repeat the eternal repeat, which repeats. We too fall to the ground eventually. We feed who needs be fed, donate our organs reluctantly to support who supported us, and to ensure the eternal repeat, repeats. The food that feeds the soil also feeds the soul. Is there any difference really? From the soil sprang my soul, and to the soil my soul returns. Gaia gave me life, and I in turn return my soul to soil. In dying, I pay my final debt to the revolving loan of Mother Earth. I have a poem called Teleology of Daisies. Not to be mistaken with teleology. And in the event anybody doesn't know it, it's a branch of philosophy about the purpose of things, the end purpose of things. This daisy, teleologically oblivious, is content that the sun shines upon its leaves. Contentment, in fact, sums up the essence of its existence. What great secret painlessly learned has been stored in its tissues, rooted in solidity of earth, years long. I envy the ease by which it lets be. Be it for, friend, it is pleased merely to assert its presence, part only of a complex ecosystem. It invades no space beyond its immediate needs, asks only to be permitted to be itself. Generally, the other plants agree. The organisms of the soil also obey, though if by chance a hungry deer comes by, it may eat its petals off. That too is right. It simply grows another flower to grace both air and soil, flirt with bees and butterflies to help it propagate itself. It seems that teleologically its purpose is to be a daisy merely. And two short poems. This one is called Pine Peely, which is a natural reserve in southern Ontario, and I wrote it from when I visited there. Somewhere there are poems in the swamp. I'll go back again and take the boardwalk through the bulrushes and reeds. Perhaps an insect or crustacean will spring a moment of truth in me. Perhaps a mating pair inspires some pain or pang of joy, creating words to hold it momentarily, as a cloud chamber in a laboratory holds the universe ephemerally in microcosm. And the next one is called Song of Parting. The snake fascinated you. Admittedly, it was behind glass while you sat enthralled 2 inches away and observed its every movement. It was not used to captivity, arched its slender spine to every crevice of its cage. Then, as if in defeat, it slithered down the rotten log to rest curled on the ground. It was closing its eyes as we parted. I think it's probably time for the last poem. A couple more?
Let's see.
This one is called Eden. I wrote this in Hyde Park in the centre of London. By the way, you probably guessed by now my accent is Irish. Eden. And the grey old earth grows up into heaven, where grey old ammonites masquerade as ornaments in men's parlours, and the charwomen move around, dusting desks and cleaning floors. In the embassy, the security men are weary, standing bulletproof before somebody else's body. Yet when all is said and done, when salary paid and inebriated, they go home and, though weary, watch television in somebody else's parlor. They appear not so weary as when on duty near Hyde Park, where the colors of the trees are pleasing to the eyes that behold them in October skies. The leaves fall, wind-blown, and spirally find their way home. This, I think, is evolution's way. Weeds and leaves together provide soil food for the next generation. As naked bodies swim in primal lakes, small earthbound seas. I read the history of poets as I sadly pound the park like a silk scarf blown against the railing. I am thinking of the next war as I watch lovers like serpents twined around trees. They wait eager and linger, fingering the gloss on God's green. And inexorably near the park, the charwomen move around, dusting desks and cleaning floors, as the security men come and go, not knowing a thing about Michelangelo. And the grey earth grows where the grey earth meets the sky, and the grey dawn comes upon October, as the colours did not matter, and mist descend upon mind. Get one final one. This one I call the Ascension Rock, Combermere, simply because that's where I stood when in Northern Ontario when I wrote it. Where perhaps stood a prehistoric man, even of that we are not sure. Who perhaps between the coming and going of glaciers looked into the valley beyond and envied wings of birds, where hunters glided in the undergrowth or danced in worship of a deity, where perhaps fought a foreign tribe or carved mind in wood. This is all surmise. More certain, I, being here, expressed surprise. By solitude thrown into suspense, I awe reverently at the question of my whither and whence. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank Jerome, not only for reading tonight, but for doing all the good things he's done over the years for peace. And a real true activist, a real true man. Thank you very much for all your stuff.